Hello, Freedom fans. You're listening to Preservative Talk Radio, brought to you by Freedom Ministries, where we confront the issues of the day on a constitutional basis, a biblical basis, and the basis of right versus wrong. Find out more at PreservativeTalkRadio.com. Fellow Freedom fans, David Allen Carmichael, Preservative Talk Radio. I told you about it. Here it is. Yes, it is. Mr. Larry Pratt has honored us with his conversation today. And thank you for being here, Mr. Larry Pratt.
Hey, thanks for having me with you. Appreciate it very much.
You've got something going on Monday right there in the District of Columbia. I understand you're going to be talking to Congress. Can you tell our listeners about that?
Actually, this was something that we did last Monday. Sorry we got the info to you late. We brought a victim of a schoolyard shooting. The first one in the modern time was carried out by Patrick Purdy in Stockton, California. And now a police officer who had survived it as a youngster came and said, look, the answer isn't banning guns. And he pointed out that had somebody at the school other than the shooter had a gun, one of the teachers, or, you know, a lot of people can carry concealed in most parts of the country, not probably so much in California, that could have turned out very differently. And that was what he was ultimately here on behalf of Representative Steve Stockman's bill to overturn the ban on firearms in schools, making the obvious point, really, that all of our mass murders in the last 20 years have occurred in gun-free zones. Many of them have been school gun-free zones. And we've simply got to get rid of these magnets that attract mass murder. So that was the message that was being delivered, and frankly, we were very pleased with the response. We had an overflow crowd come to a fairly large conference room there and on Capitol Hill, and I think it reflected the interest that people have in this issue, and it was encouraging to see members of Congress and their staff were interested in moving the ball toward a pro-Second Amendment agenda. It was a very encouraging day.
Well, that had to be encouraging for you because there's so many times. Recently, obviously, we're going to be talking about the threats to those things that you were supporting through the Gun Owners of America. I have a friend who was shot in Virginia Tech, and I say that because we know, even as Jesus said, that he was the God of the living and not of the dead. But she was probably either the first or second person killed at Virginia Tech. And I had an opportunity to go up to Virginia Tech when they were kind of praying over the building, commissioning it for its reuse. And a lady approached this girl's mother talking about how they were going to discuss with the governor that day how he needed to be pressing for stricter gun controls. This mother of this girl said to her, please don't do that. And her comment was exactly what you just described. It was sort of shocking for everybody to sit and listen to it, but she said, had there been people in the building who are prepared to defend the students, then you wouldn't have seen the mass murder that you saw. That I watched, as obviously many people throughout the nation did in our broadcast area, I was impressed. It was heckling from Piers Morgan on CNN, and your response, obviously very controlled and rational. It seemed to me that he was kind of painting you as an extremist. And then the one thing that got me, and I'd like you to comment on, was he made a comment about gun murders in England. Of course, with people having less guns since they've been confiscated, of course, there may be statistically less gun murders, but it wasn't necessarily what the actual facts are about violent or weapon crime in England. But he didn't give you a chance to answer that. What would you have said had he actually given you an opportunity to answer?
There were only perhaps 35 gun crimes in the last year of official data, but there were almost 1,000 murders that were committed by people using other means than guns. And it's important to remember, and I pointed this out on the show, that this governmental entity that the Brits call the Investigatory of the Constabulary, one could kind of choke trying to say that, studied the British crime data and said, they're a sham. One of the things that the investigatory pointed to was the penchant for counting as one murder when somebody, say, kills two people and then commits suicide, and that's just listed as one murder.
They're not listing how many people died from gunshot wounds.
Right, from felonious use of a firearm, or from any other weapon for that matter. And so the Brits have consciously worked to keep their data as low as possible, but the thing that nevertheless bites them is the UN itself found that only three countries are more violent than is England. More violent crime in England than almost anywhere else in the world. So, the rapist may not kill you, but you don't mind a little rape, huh? Is that a legitimate rape or something? It's okay for Piers Morgan to defend it. Just don't let a U.S. candidate for Congress present such an idea. This is really over the top, that they are willing to ignore how the criminals have been given free rein in England and what a nasty, miserable place it is in the United Kingdom. Whereas guns awash in Fairfax County, Virginia, where Gun Owners of America is located, obviously it's not that far from the Capitol because we lobby the Capitol. We're there physically all the time. We have a murder rate in Fairfax County, Virginia, where you can easily get a permit to carry a concealed firearm. It's 0.3 per 100,000. They have a murder rate four times ours in England with virtually no guns at all, at least no legal guns. And here we are in Fairfax County, and people can and do walk around either concealed firearms or open. I was in a store not too long ago, and I was being attended by the one of the clerks at the cash register by the door, and all of a sudden, in walks a guy with a gun in his holster. The clerk looked up, saw that the guy had the gun in the holster, and looked down and finished counting out my money. And it was no big deal. In Northern Virginia, in a urban metropolitan county of over 1 million people, it's not even a big deal here. You can imagine in the rest of America, something like that would be even less noticed.
Well, off the top of your head, then, it makes me think about Heller versus District of Columbia, and that the District of Columbia carry ban obviously was so significant. Do you know off the top of your head the difference in crime rate between the gun-free zone in Washington, D.C. and Fairfax?
The impact of Heller was to, in effect, take guns out of the safe, and you were allowed to have them in working order, at least long guns. And just that, even though the guns aren't supposed to be loaded, they really don't want you to use them for self-defense, the murder rate began to fall somewhat precipitously. It went from one of the highest in the country down to, I believe it's down to now around 9 per 100,000. The national average is slightly under 5. They got a long way to go to catch up with Fairfax County, Virginia, but nevertheless, they've made a lot of progress, because at least home invasions are a little bit iffier a proposition now that people actually could get a gun pretty handily in the District of Columbia, which would have been very illegal before the Heller decision.
I do have another anecdote. My 15-year-old was going to college, bless his heart, and he had a paper he had to do, and they played a video about gun regulation, and of course it was Michael Moore's movie about guns. They sent him home and said, please write a paper on this. Well, my son was getting A's, was being used as the example in class, and everything was good up until that final paper. And I read the paper just before he went off to school, kind of one of these, hey, silly, always have somebody proofread your paperwork, right? And so I read it. I was just amazed. But the silly young man wrote statistics on how, and he just, you know, I don't talk to him about these things. He just figured it out. He did his homework. And he did a paper just explaining the details of how crime goes down everywhere where there are liberal gun laws. And I don't mean like liberal politically minded. I'm talking about the liberality of having non-restrictive gun areas. Of course, suddenly his class grade went down. It was the only B he got. So how's that? Otherwise, he was summa cum laude. You know, that was, it taught him a good character lesson that you don't always, you, in every environment, obviously, you're going to have those kind of things influence you. All the arguments that I'm seeing on the TV, we got national news, and they're all talking about you don't need to have 10 rounds to go hunting, or you don't need 10 rounds to go protect yourself. The only thing is I'm reading the Constitution and the Federalist Papers. The Second Amendment wasn't about necessarily protecting yourself from a criminal, because that was a natural right that was inherent and reserved, no doubt. I wrote this down as I was preparing for this interview. I said, I'm wondering where in history has there been a place where they began to register guns where they were not then eventually confiscated? And I wondered where in history, if they've been confiscated, that violent or deadly weapon crime didn't increase, or that totalitarian oppression also didn't occur. You know, it's just kind of thinking about that in history, that most likely it has always led to both increased crime and totalitarianism. What do you want to say about that?
It will certainly guarantee an increase in crime. In our own country, gives evidence of that. And I was pointing to the difference between, if you will, free counties and or jurisdictions and unfree jurisdictions, where people can protect themselves. Criminal activity is greatly reduced. Where criminals don't think they have to fear an armed victim, they're much more brazen. That's just something you can see here within the United States. If you'd like, you can go look at Mexico. Their idea of gun control is so strict that if you actually were able to get a permit and a license to own a gun, there's only one store in the whole republic in Mexico City. You have to go there in person, pick out the gun that's allowed you on the certificate, and that's the deal. Well, there aren't many armed Mexican homes, and as a result, their violent crime rate is atrocious. The cartels operate with impunity. They invade people's homes on the northern border of Mexico, give them 15 minutes to collect what belongings they can, provide a notary who witnesses the signing over of the person's house to the cartel, and the cartel has a new safe house, a new jump-off for crossing the U.S. border. The Mexicans have no way whatsoever to protect themselves. Police obviously can't control something like that. And so the citizens are left at the not very tender mercies of the criminal element of the country. And I think it's just evil to tell people that they may not defend themselves. That's a very low view of human life, and it certainly flat out violates everything that I've ever been able to find in Scripture. Scripture, from the time of Abraham's rescue of Lot to the time when Christ commended Peter for having a sword in the upper room during the Last Supper, it's been one statement after another of the justifiable use of lethal force in self-defense. One thing I'll say, though, I don't see anything about a right to keep and bear arms in Scripture. I see an obligation to protect life. It's the flip side of the Sixth Commandment. Not only are we not to commit murder, we're to do everything feasible to prevent murder from happening.
We're talking to Larry Pratt, founder of Gun Owners of America, today, discussing those things related to Gun Owners of America and their plight to do their best to support your protections in law with regard to the Second Amendment. We're in an environment today where people are passionate about their opinions about guns. Why can't we have less guns? Why can't we have less violence? As it occurs to me, is it has nothing to do with guns. It has everything to do with the hearts and minds of those of us in America. Ultimately, we have a responsibility to love one another, protect one another, and our rights and property. We're going to come right back here with Larry Pratt and me, David Allen Carmichael, and my Preservative Talk Radio.